Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. Joining me, as always, is Billboard.com senior editor Katie Atkinson. Oh, my God, Katie. Can you believe it's been 25 years since Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back was released?
Oh my God. I can believe it, but that is a crazy long time.
Well, we're going to talk all about Sir Mix-a-Lot and Baby Got Back in just a moment, because the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we've got Coming Around Again with Billboard.com Senior Associate Editor Andrew Unterberger. Andrew will be discussing the 25th anniversary of Sir Mix-a-Lot's smash hit, Baby Got Back. He'll be joined by former Billboard staffer and podcaster, Natalie Weiner, who is now at Bleacher Report, to talk about Sir Mix-a-Lot's importance as a Seattle rapper, Natalie's from Seattle, and whether the song has managed to transcend the cliche that pop culture turned it into. So stay tuned for that in just a few moments.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes so you won't miss an episode, and give us a rating or review while you're at it. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at Keith_Caulfield or at KT Atkinson. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit iTunes.com/Billboard Podcasts. Well, before we join Andrew, let's talk a little bit about Baby Got Back. The song spent 5 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100 back in 1992 and was an inescapable summer anthem. It finished 1992 as the year's number two biggest song on the Hot 100, behind only Boyz II Men's End of the Road, which too was an inescapable hit. And Baby Got Back would stage a return in 2014 thanks to a sample of the tune in Nicki Minaj's massive Anaconda, which reached or slithered, hey, to number two on the Hot 100. So, Katie, do you have any specific memories of this song?
Of course I do.
Who doesn't?
Because I was 10 years old in 1992, and I vividly remember my friend procuring the cassette tape of this song.
The single?
The ka-single.
I had the ka-single as well.
And we listened to it at her birthday party over and over and over again, never getting tired of it, just wanting to learn every single line. And its inappropriate appeal to children continues, because my six-year-old niece and nephew now sing the, oh my God, look at her butt part, because of the movie Sing that came out last year with all the fun little singing animals.
And it's like, what, like a 4 second bit?
It's literally, like, if you look this up on YouTube, it is a 5 second moment of the movie, and that is it. And they love it because 6 year olds think butts are hilarious. So there you have it. Its appeal continues.
Wow. Well, we'll have to hear all about that in just a second, because
it's time for Coming Around Again.
Yeah. Your girlfriend got your butt. Hell yeah. Tell her, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake that healthy butt. Baby got ballet feet with the open booty.
Hello and welcome to Coming Around Again, Billboard's newish anniversary themed podcast celebrating milestone anniversaries in the music world. Today we're going to be talking about Baby Got Back, which was the signature hit for Seattle rapper Sir Mix-a-Lot. He came out with the song about 25 years ago this week. Went to number one on the Hot 100 pretty quickly, became one of the Yeah, maybe one of the most beloved rap songs of the 90s, certainly one of the most recognized rap songs of the 90s. And here to talk about it with us, making her LeBron-like return to the halls of Billboard magazine, Natalie Weiner of Bleacher Report. What's up, Natalie?
Hey, Andrew. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Of course. If you're, you know, a regular to the Pop Shop feed, you might remember Natalie. She had a couple of podcasts back in the day. She was part of Ballin' Out
a few months ago, eons.
A little throwback Wednesday for you there. She was.
I had some appearances on the Must Hear Music podcast.
That's right.
As well as Ballin' Out.
So you might know Natalie from that, but what you might not know about Natalie, and what I'm sure even probably some of her closest friends and coworkers don't know about her, is that she's actually from Seattle, much like Sir Mix-a-Lot. So, Natalie, why don't you start by kind of talking about, you know, what's Sir Mix-a-Lot's, you know, legacy in Seattle like? You know, how would you, if you get to compare it to another famous rapper who's like really associated with one city, like what would you think that would be?
I mean, it's really interesting with Sir Mix-a-Lot just because I think Seattle as a whole, I mean, obviously it's not a bastion of hip hop, like, and it never has been, you know, Macklemore,
not historically,
despite no. Macklemore. But it's like, and he had this song that I think was widely viewed as a novelty at the time. And even locally, I don't know that it necessarily transcended that reputation. But within the Seattle music community, he is definitely known as like sort of a bedrock person in the city's hip hop community. Like he was the sort of person around whom it coalesced, like before Baby Got Back in mm-hmm. the 80s. But, I mean, I don't know that a lot of people really realize that part of his reputation, even in Seattle. But he is certainly a hometown hero. I mean, like, as silly... I think he sort of owns the silliness, you know? Like,
sure.
He did a performance of Baby Got Back with the Seattle Symphony, you know? And he, like, invited all these random people. Like,
what did that sound like?
It was,
did they try, like,
you know,
recreate the samples
goofy
on string
yeah,
sections and stuff like
basically.
That?
Basically.
Wow.
This was just a couple of years ago, so pretty recently. But, like, so he owns the goofiness of it. Like, he's raised the 12th man flag at Seahawks games, stuff like that. So he's definitely beloved. And, I mean, as a person from Seattle, like, growing up in my, like, very white, very middle class neighborhood, like, that was my introduction to rap, was
really?
Like Sir Mix-a-Lot's Baby Got Back. I mean, when I was like really young,
okay.
You know, aside from maybe whatever like very chart topping hits were around, like that was the first song that I like knew. And I was like, oh yeah, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Baby Got Back. Like there was still that kind of like ownership of it, even though it's just this one goofy song.
And it was the kind of thing that like, you know, kids in the hallways of Seattle schools would be like talking about Sir Mix-a-Lot, like passing around, you know, cassettes or
no.
CDs.
No, I mean, because by the time I was like sort of that
sure.
age, he was a little bit passe. But
like older brothers maybe, or like
maybe I don't know. It was like his heyday of being sort of underground hip hop man was really mm-hmm. like 87 to 94 maybe. And so, you know, by the time I was like able to be cognizant of music was like probably like 5 to 10 years after that.
Sure.
But I mean, it's definitely, like, every party you went to, you heard it. I mean, it's like, you just... And I realized that it was super popular everywhere. Obviously, it was a number one song, but I think it probably had more staying power around Seattle.
Right.
Just because he was, like, our hometown guy. Our one rapper who we had for a very long time.
And yet, no, you've complained about this to me before, as an NFL fan and a Seahawks fan specifically, that... You know, when they're showing the Seahawks games and they have, like, the montages of, you know, Space Needle and Pike's Peak and stuff like that, or the Pike's Market. Pike Place Market and the Space Needle. And,
yeah, the bumper music is always
usually
Nirvana,
like
Pearl Jam,
Macklemore now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so why do you think that Sir Mix-a-Lot gets left out of that?
I really think
canon?
It's because people sort of don't take the song seriously. Like, they really do consider it, like, a novelty hit, which... If you look at what is so interesting, because obviously butts back in the day, it was like, ooh, a guy likes butts? What? But now that's totally the norm. I mean, everybody has butt implants and like we're all
sure.
talking about Kim Kardashian's butt or Nicki Minaj's butt or whatever. You know, that's like a totally standard thing. So, I mean, he was ahead of the curve, really.
Ahead of the curve, no pun intended there. Yeah. No, I mean, this is definitely like the big bang of butt songs, right? Like, this
yeah.
is the one that, like, you can, like, if you're looking at the great canon of, I mean, there were songs before it. I know, like EU had a big song called The Butt, and there were other kind of songs that, you know, were regional hits or minor hits, and like, they've endured, but this was the song that, like, I'm sure if you're looking at the chronology, it's like, you know, very few in the years later, you know, one a year, a couple years leading up to this, and then like, you know, 15 a year after that. And certainly when I was growing up, like, I kind of took that for granted, I guess. Like, I never thought of, you know, when I heard this song, I never thought of it as like a song that was taking a particularly bold stance on anything. It just seemed like, oh yeah, it's hip hop, you know, rappers love girls with big asses. And certainly that's a thing that exists and has always existed.
Right.
But in his own right, he was in sort of an innovator here. With this.
Yeah, I know. And it's so funny that there's like such a philosophy behind it too. He's like, it's sort of weirdly like body positive before that was a thing, but also like not, because it's sort of male gaze-ish, obviously. Not necessarily to get too into the like feminist implications or not of Baby Got Back, but it's definitely like when I was, you know, young and impressionable and I was like, oh, you don't like the girls in Cosmo? Like what? Like this all felt like very revolutionary to me, you know, as somebody who is not, didn't like have a lot of people around with that perspective.
But getting back to the Seattle part of it, like, I do wonder if he was hurt by maybe not having like his own crew. I don't know if maybe he didn't, they just weren't a very big part of his bigger hits. But like, you know, you think of like somebody like Nelly, like, mm-hmm. he really like, he basically, when you're watching Nelly videos, like you felt like he brought his entire city with him, basically. Like,
yeah.
You know, the Cardinals and Blues hats, and he had the St. Lunatics, and like he was very vocal, and he had like backup, basically.
Yeah.
Sir Mix-a-Lot, like, you know, he does rep for Seattle, and like, you know, listen to a bunch of his other bigger songs aside from Baby Got Back, you do hear that. I think that kind of one of the cruel ironies maybe is that like his most Seattle themed song is probably a song called Posse on Broadway, I'm sure you're very familiar, which was his biggest hit before this one. And like mentions like a number of very specific.
Oh, it's super Seattle. It's all about Capitol Hill and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a Boys in the Hood for Seattle almost. But the song's called Posse on Broadway, which is named after a street in Seattle. But I think if you hear that, you think, oh, it's like,
yeah, you
Broadway.
Think it's talking about New York.
It's talking about New York, but yeah,
but
like
it's a Seattle street. Real Seattle heads know, Andrew.
Well, I'm sure, but
it makes the branding hard.
Yeah. So talking about Posse on Broadway, like, are there other kind of pre Baby Got Back songs that like either have a bigger reputation in Seattle than they do outside, or that you are particularly a fan of?
I mean, Posse on Broadway is definitely the one that people know, like people who are my age, like, are aware of. But I was doing some reading before, and I guess one thing that he was really important to him was like having his independent label. Like, he partnered with this DJ who's actually still active, and he still hosts an independent rap show in Seattle, and they had their own label called Nasty Mix Records, and that's what he released his debut on, and it sold a million copies. So like, he was really successful independently, and he had just been like, according to sort of what I read, he was really just releasing mixtapes locally that aren't even out now, you know, like, and kind of had some local success in these other songs that like would get played in Seattle but nowhere else. But yeah, he was successful independently, and then he got signed by Rick Rubin, obviously. But like,
by the way, I had no idea that Rick Rubin was a part of Baby Got Back. Like,
yeah, which is crazy.
What a career that guy had. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, the kind of the iconic hits that he played a part in, that like, they're probably not in like the top 10 line items on his resume. It's unbelievable.
But just like the kind of random parts. But yeah, I mean, and he did that, but he kept the publishing, which like was super smart. And so like, think about how many copies that's sold and how many times it gets streamed. He gets all of it, you know, which is like, that's insane to think about. So he was really kind of a businessman like back then, and like very sort of conscientious about keeping his own stuff. But I do think that you're right, like his focus on being independent and DIY and stuff, and as much as that was connected to Seattle and actually kind of connected to grunge if you think about it, you know, like this like focus on a local scene, it was helpful I think in the money part, but maybe less helpful as far as like creating a legacy.
Do Sir Mix-a-Lot and the grunge scene ever kind of commingle? Like, was there ever a time, like, did he and Eddie Vedder ever play together?
He has
like
a song with Mudhoney.
Wow.
And also,
from, like, the late 80s?
No, from the 90s.
Oh, jeez.
And he, like, toured with, if I'm remembering correctly, I should have fact-checked this, but I'm pretty sure he had a band with some of the guys from Presidency of the United States of America.
Oh, you know what? I do remember
and
that.
And was touring with them, like, in the 90s, which is crazy to think about. So he was, like, he owned his Seattle-ness, and like like you're saying, it's just not, you know, it's not a part of Baby Got Back, so people don't really think about it as much, but he did make it a big part of his identity, like Seattle and what it was all about. But I agree, the Posse on Broadway thing, it's difficult branding because it has the same name. It's difficult to make distinct. And also the fact that just the audience for hip hop in Seattle was inherently smaller than it would have been like in St. Louis when Nelly was coming, or any of the other local scenes that could really like build up their people. Like Seattle could to an extent, but it's just, there's just not as many hip hop fans there as there are in other cities.
Is there like a second most famous rapper from Seattle in that kind of golden age era? Anybody that you can think of that comes to mind for that? No.
Not really. I mean, it's like really minor people, like really, really, really very local. I mean, there was kind of like, there was the Sir Mix-a-Lot era, mm-hmm. and that was that. And then the next like Seattle hip hop bubble, at least insofar as I am aware of, and I'm not going to like say I'm a
Seattle
super,
Twitter's
going to
come after
expert.
You for this one.
I know. But I mean, it was the Blue Scholars, and that was like kind of mid-aughts, okay. I guess. They were like two dudes who like met at UW, very sort of what the uneducated people might call conscious hip hop, because I think that's like a not helpful term.
Sure.
But it was definitely very politically minded and kind of like targeted.
Collegiate.
Yeah. Collegiate, like targeted for an alt rock audience, if that makes sense. Like mm-hmm. it was very appealing to that. And so it kind of took off in Seattle and they became like local celebrities, and they actually did get a major distribution deal, I believe, for their second album. And so they like had some minor national success, but nothing crazy. It was definitely all sort of on the indie rap spectrum. And then there was Macklemore. And then, like, you know, I saw Macklemore opening for the Blue Scholars when I was in high school. So they were like a part of the same scene, you know, but Macklemore just had this song that took off, and, you know.
And has Sir Mix-a-Lot ever commented on Macklemore, to your knowledge? Did they ever talk to each other?
I'm sure he would say only nice things, because like
it's part of
the point. But I should look that up. I don't know. I haven't seen anything, but I know he's a big Seahawks fan.
It's just so big. I can't believe it's just so round. It's like out there. I mean, gross.
My anaconda don't. My anaconda don't. My anaconda don't want none unless you got buns, hun.
Boy, Tway named Tway.
So in any event, this song comes out 25 years ago. It's kind of comes out like a weird moment in rap history where the conventional golden age is sort of winding down. Stuff like Public Enemy and N.W.A. they're kind of winding down in influence, and but G-Funk hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
and you know, Dr. Dre releases The Chronic like I think 6 months from then, and that kind of points the way for where hip hop's going to go, you know, for the rest of the '90s, and at this time, like, you know, I looked at the charts from the week that Baby Got Back first hit number one, and it's like him, Criss Cross, and Arrested Development.
Hmm.
And like none of those acts really make it out of 1992, at least like as pop
That's
stars.
Interesting.
And like you look back at the song, and it's a song about asses, which was kind of unprecedented at the time, or at least
in the way that it was.
And it's based on this like Detroit techno sample from 1986,
like fairly obscure-ish.
I'd never actually heard it until doing research for this podcast. And I don't know if it's like a straight sample, but it's at least like an interpolation, something like that. He kind of comes at it from a weird way. He's not rhyming conventionally, and in the video he's like on top of a gigantic 100-foot ass or whatever. Is this like a weirder song than people give it credit for?
No, I think you're right. I don't think we do. I mean, I think because most people write it off because they're like, oh, it's that butt song, you know? Yeah. Like, it just, like, people have segmented it in their mind in that way for so long, and it came out in a time before hip-hop really got the critical kind of examination that it deserved for the most part.
Certainly true.
And so it just has been so long in the, like, party weird song, like, thing. But it's... I mean, it's a good song. It's like solid, you know, it's got a point of view. It's got a sound that's not like anything else, but it's like fully fleshed out. No pun intended again.
accidental.
It really was accidental.
Got puns.
I just have butts on the brain, I guess. Apparently. You can listen to the whole song, listen to all the lyrics, and you're like, I'm interested in what you're saying. I don't know. Like, this is funny. And
have you heard the rest of Mac Daddy? the album that it comes from?
I haven't done a lot of listening, but I would, you know, tune in a little. You're right. It does kind of exist in an in-between space. That's interesting. And I think that makes sense as coming out of a Seattle scene that was never really fully developed. You know, it makes sense that it wouldn't kind of have this very solid identity in the way that a lot of other local rap did.
And the rest of the album, I don't know if it has like an identity crisis, but this is definitely like an outlier even on the album.
Yeah.
Like the rest of it's very, like it reminded me of the Ice Cube albums that the Bomb Squad produced.
Hmm.
It's still very, it's kind of got that golden age DNA. It feels very, like, you know,
definitely
it's aggressive,
has a little boom bap, a little other stuff. Yeah.
It's caught in between. And obviously it had zero other hits. And actually, like, after the song goes to number one, he only hits the Hot 100 once more in his entire history. He gets, I think it's number 97 with a version of Sugar Hill Gang's Apache that's called Jump On It, which I'm sure like tricks a lot of people on Spotify these days. If you search for like Jump On It,
right, you're like on the Sir Mix-a-Lot version,
right? Yeah, it's like, oh, well, this is similar, but it's not exactly what I remember. Do you think this song was almost, you know, I don't know, you would say it was a bad thing for him because obviously it made him, you know, incredibly successful and iconic for at least one song, but like did this song kind of doom his long term prospects?
I mean, I think that's the classic question. Like, does the one mega hit mean you're never, like, never going to get there again? You know, if Sir Mix-a-Lot doesn't do Baby Got Back, does he spend more time, like, slow building Seattle's rap scene? I don't know. You know, like, these are hypotheticals that it's hard to say. But I do think, I mean, it's hard to get out from under something that's that big. No pun intended.
3 for 3, Natalie.
Trying.
We're officially on fire.
I'm not even trying, but I'm just on a roll. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's so distinctive and it's so like, you know, like you're saying, it's a weird song.
Sure.
So if you're going to be defined by that song, it's going to be hard to match because it's just like, what is this even, you know? But I don't know. It's strange to see and I wonder what he would say about it. I mean, I think he's like fine with it because he's like a bajillionaire, but
yeah, and he seems to have like a pretty good sense of perspective in general. It doesn't seem like he holds any grudges, and it seems like he's just kind of here for the party. Like he probably never expected to have a song this big,
yeah,
and the fact that it did and that, you know, he got to a certain level and then he maybe wasn't able to stay on that level, he's probably like, yeah, this shouldn't have happened in the first place, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely like learned it all himself. Like he produced that himself. He did. He DJed himself, like scratched and mixed. Like he DJed parties at the Boys and Girls Club in Seattle, from what I was reading about. And that's like how he built his following, was like DJing these parties. And so it's very much like him alone sort of putting this whole thing together alone in Seattle, ran basically with like a few people around him. And so I wonder if it is maybe a little disappointing for him to like have spent all this time like mastering his craft and only to be known as like the guy who sings the butt song.
Sure.
But like, I don't know. Somebody needs to do the definitive Sir Mix-a-Lot profile and figure out what's going on in his mind these days.
So you mentioned kind of doing some reading about him, and you told me before the podcast started that you actually brought some reading material and some kind of supplemental stuff for us to discuss.
Oh, I mean, well, I mentioned some of it, just the stuff about like sort of the genesis of Seattle's rap scene and how crucial he was to that. But yeah, I mean, it's just sort of interesting looking even at his electronic press kit, which is available on YouTube, like from 1991.
Nice.
And he like, it's filmed with a view of the Space Needle, like it's him in front of the Seattle skyline, like talking about how he's so proud to be an independent artist, or to have come up that way at least, and like to be from Seattle and blah, 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 blah. And like he talks about like, oh, my next single is going to come out probably in January. It's called Baby Got Back. And like, you know, Rick Rubin, it's his favorite, but you should see the girls that he dates, like implying that they don't have any asses whatsoever. And so it was just like a perfect moment, you know, sort of distilling the whole thing that was provocative about the song, you know, that he was like coming at it from this whole different perspective, but that Rick obviously saw the potential.
Always knows a hit when he sees it, Rick Rubin.
Right.
At this point in the podcast, I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
Always kind of hated the song.
What?
I know that sounds like a strange thing to say about a song that we just spent the last, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes talking about.
No, it doesn't. I mean, why do you hate it?
Well, so In general, as we were saying, I grew up in a time where like this song was just part of the culture. You didn't really think of it as a song on its own merits. I found the beat to be kind of ugly and abrasive, and I found the lyrics to be kind of like cheesy or just kind of gaudy. I don't know. As a kid, I guess I wasn't ready for this.
Yeah.
And over the years, I've come to realize that like my distaste for the song isn't really so much about the song as it is what it became.
Right.
And like how it kind of like my when I think of the song, I think of like, frat boys doing it at karaoke,
right,
or like, singing along to it at, like,
or New Jersey cover bands, as they probably did that night. Andrew and I were at a party where we both went to a New Jersey cover band and they did Rapper's Delight and it was really scarring. They probably did Baby Got Back earlier in the night. I don't know.
But... You got to get there like right when they start. That's their lead in song. That's how they get the crowd amped.
I mean, I would do it at karaoke. Like, I'm not going to. I know every single word to this song.
And that's fine. And like as I've, kind of spent some more time with it over the years and got to look at it from more of an objective perspective, I guess I would say that like, I definitely didn't give the song enough credit for how clever it is, first mm-hmm. of all. Like, he's really good at, like, kind of, he switches up his flow at, like, unexpected points, and he knows where to, like, really hammer a catchphrase. And, like, you don't even realize until, like, you take the time to think about it, just, like, how many iconic sentences are in the song. One of the things that really kind of helped sell the song for me was when Nicki Minaj came out with Anaconda. Because, she samples that song very, very liberally, like, yes, almost to the point where...
It's more like a cover or a remix.
Yeah, like usually when songs do that, it's a sign of laziness or, like, a lack of general ingenuity. But with her, it was kind of... It put in perspective just, like, what a large imprint on the culture the song has. And also, just, like, obviously coming from a female perspective, songs takes on a different message. But even though she flips it, I wouldn't say that she really changes like the quintessential meaning of the song that much. And it's interesting because like when you hear him talk about the song now, and the song got like a bunch, it got controversy back in the day because
definitely.
It was attacked.
The video
for being...
was like banned or put late night or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. The video got banned. He was seen as misogynistic.
Which is so funny. It just goes to show, like, how our view of misogyny has changed. I mean, definitely, misogyny in hip-hop was an issue and is an issue,
sure,
then and whatever. But saying, I like girls with big butts is not misogynistic. Well,
and then that's the thing, is that he says, like, whenever anybody, like, talked to me about having a problem with this song, it was always men. And that, like, women, not to say that all women are okay with everything that he says in the song, but generally women were like, it's about time. Like, that's the thing he keeps saying, is that, like, finally somebody... like stuck up for women that don't have figures that you would see in Cosmo. It's actually like, if you want to be a little bit sensationalizing about it, it's almost like a protest song in a way. It's like, it's basically saying that like this disenfranchised group of women who haven't been represented fairly or accurately in popular culture. It's saying like, let's give them some shine because they are beautiful, and it's not fair to hold them to this one particular standard. So I think the Nicki song helped me see that to a certain extent, just because she really just embraces it, and it's not like she's saying it's not like an answer song. Like usually when female rappers are like doing a song that's a spin on a male,
it's
rap,
like flipping around the meaning.
It's like Roxanne's
so that
Revenge.
It's like
this is what you're coming from. This is where I'm coming from. This is more just like, hey, I appreciate you celebrating people like me, and that's a pretty cool thing, I think.
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, I think like way before this time, like now it's a pretty common discussion to be like, well, let's represent women of color, and, women of color can be attractive, and women who don't look like, Kate Upton or whatever, sure, or whoever, it can be attractive. And it's
Kate Moss at the time. Maybe.
Kate Moss. Yeah. Just whatever skinny blonde person happens to be famous. It's definitely, he's like, and it's framed around sex, so people are like, oh, this is so licentious and mm-hmm. bad and objectifying, but he's really like, Jane Fonda ain't got a motor in the back of her Honda. It's just
that's like the 20th best line in the song too.
Right. And it's interesting that he's like giving you know, he's just like owning it. And he's like, not everybody looks skinny and not everybody's got a big butt like I like. So, you know, it's sort of giving everybody their props for their thing and saying this is what I'm into. Yeah. And I think it's so funny. It really, when you're talking about the cultural relevance, it sort of was crystallized when that whole controversy about Blake Lively, remember when she posted that Instagram picture of herself on the red carpet and it was like from the back and she was like LA face with the Oakland booty and everyone just like gave her the you know, she was just like dragged on Twitter, the whole thing. But it was like, you should be, because that's not, you know, this isn't your song. This isn't your thing. You're not who he was talking about. Blake Lively is the Kate Moss, not the, you know, whatever big butt person.
That does not have back, relatively speaking. Certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just kind of funny. And especially, like, there's so much fraught in saying that, because the whole point of LA Face with the Oakland Booty is, like, black girl butt, basically, you know? And so it's just, like, it shows how the culture has changed and what we value has changed and stuff, and also where there's still work to be done there. But yeah, there's a pretty intense meaning, and, like, not a lot of men, I think, especially at that time and not now, would have such a nuanced understanding of what it means to be a woman in the world and what it means to be assessed based on how you look all the time, you know?
Yeah. Have you always liked the song, or was there ever a moment where, like, the cliche kind of overwhelmed what was positive about it?
No, I mean, I, like, it was kind of in the background for a long time. And then once I started to, like, get more into music in general and sort of seek it out more, it was like, oh yeah. I mean, it was just, it always felt like a Seattle song that I would always like, and it's been a part of my life for a long time. And it's like, I don't know, my mom likes it.
Really?
Know? Like, yeah.
So in Seattle, so Sir Mix-a-Lot counts as mom rap?
I mean, depending on your mom. But my mom appreciated the big butt message, so.
All right, well, that's a powerful message to end on, I think. All right, well, thanks so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you talking Sir Mix-a-Lot with me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.